Bearing Witness, part of the Racial Reckoning Project, is a reflective dive into the events unfolding in this season of racial upheaval and, we hope, change. I'm Reverend Anthony Galloway.
And I'm independent journalist Georgia Fort.
So we've just come through our first election since we began to do this check-in work here on Bearing Witness. For many folks, it was a test. It was a test to see what progress we can make legislatively, given all of the events that have happened, both on the street with George Floyd, but also for those of us who have been wondering about that same question for a long time. As a classmate of Philando Castile's, one of the things that I had been hoping for since my classmate was gunned down six blocks from my house by an officer who was in a training with me not more than a couple months before that. So this idea about how we're all connected and can make some decisions about things get better, I'm not quite sure where my heart is seeing the results that have come out. Not necessarily because of any specific decision, but more so that the groundswell that I saw when everything went down and as we were in the streets and as we were hoping together just for a verdict to say that our system can work for us, at least in some small way, I'm now wondering about where is the energy that was for really thinking about doing something very differently. And so that's where my head is at. Ms. Georgia, as we look at the results from this week and some of the other developments, you've had your pulse on the ground as always, so we want to check in with you. What have you kept your pulse on this week as we continue to move forward towards with our arc of justice?
Anthony, I think this election reiterated just how important unity is. When you think about the fact that you have a mayor in Minneapolis who was elected not necessarily because 50% of the people voted for him, it's because 50% of the people were not united in who else they would prefer to have in that seat. And I think the same thing is true about some of the other hot seats that were open. And so the thing that is coming up for me in this moment, Anthony, is the importance of unity, because our community, even on the issue of police accountability, as you said, and police reform, we knew it was important. The community was united in wanting change, but not necessarily united in what that change looks like. And so what else is true that we're realizing is that change takes time. It's not a quick process. It's not something that happens overnight. And the folks who I know who voted no, it's not necessarily that they were saying they don't want change. It's saying that they want a more concrete plan of what that change looks like. And so I think that our community is still united on that need for change. But now we have to do some serious reevaluating on what that change looks like and how do we bring it to fruition?
You know, I keep juxtaposing that feeling of being in George Floyd Square with the feeling now and asking the questions around, you know, asking myself the questions around, you know, what did I hope for? I was speaking with a group representing the Racial Reckoning Project this morning of international leaders who were looking at issues around reform and change, particularly around peace and reconciliation and several other things from various countries. And they had very interesting questions about what progress we've seen. And when we kind of recapped where we are and what some of the decisions have made, there was a very strong sense. I actually watched some of the squares on the Zoom meeting. Some folks kind of slump a little bit because they had hoped that we were going to be bringing them some concrete things that they could take on and piggyback. And instead, we actually ended up in much more of an even exchange where they were saying, well, here's what we're doing. Here's what we're working on. And so it became a conversation about solidarity rather than a conversation about seeing it work somewhere and seeing how we can marshal and bank on that energy. And so it was really interesting as we talked about that. But then we also had to take account of some things that have happened, right? So we know about the attention towards what was trying to be voted for in Minneapolis, you know, get underway in St. Paul, at least in some incremental ways towards moving towards non-police responses to issues and situations where they got those responders that are getting ready to implement if they haven't already started. And at least we have seen some reforms and rules of engagement, although, of course, as you said, it's going to take a while because even after the rules of engagement had changed, we saw high-speed chases kill innocent people and young people, even though those policies for those departments, those agencies said that should never have happened. So we've got a lot of work to do, but there are some things to look back on and saying we're having a different conversation than we were having prior to the murder of George Floyd. And the thing that got me, and I keep bringing this up, and it's just going to keep coming up, is our continued need for black and brown bodies, blood, in order for the consciousness of our country. It seems like there's this hunger for that kind of, to exact that kind of pain as kind of a blood sacrifice to the consciousness gods for us to move and make change. And that keeps coming full circle. You know, we lost our brother George Floyd, we lost Philando, we lost Jamar, we lost Breonna Taylor, we've lost all these folks. And so on the other side, folks are saying, well, at least that can move towards something different. And unfortunately, for some of us, it seems like it's moving that direction. And for some folks, it's like, man, what else would it take? And so these are some of the questions that are coming up from folks in my congregations, in circles, even in preparation for a funeral that I'm going to officiate tomorrow. The questions around this came up just because we've been having these conversations with community members. So I'm just curious what your beat is, what your pulse is as you continue to connect with folks as an independent journalist, and they reflect back on this moment. What through line has folks began to crystallize for you?
Well, I think, you know, the through line, Anthony, is that people aren't giving up, you know, that they've identified change is needed. And although many people have put their eggs in the basket of the George Floyd Policing Act being passed on a federal level, and that didn't pass yet, right? Or some people thought that by voting yes and having a public safety department, that would be the change, and that didn't happen. But people aren't giving up. We just saw an emergency rally that was held outside of the Brooklyn Center Police Department by not only the family of Dante Wright, but also the family of Kobe Heisler, who both spoke publicly about their concern of the Brooklyn Center Police Chief's comments about the bill that was passed ultimately by the city council after Dante Wright was killed. And so here you have a piece of legislation that has passed in the city of Brooklyn Center, but has not been implemented yet, and now is being criticized by the chief of police. And so now, even in that situation where it felt like there had been some progress forward with getting this bill passed, and also Kobe Heisler's mom, Amity, pointed out that this bill not only passed in Brooklyn Center, even though it hasn't been implemented yet, but it was also passed and implemented in Evanston, Illinois.
All right.
And so it is starting to be a blueprint for other cities who are looking for different measures of police reform, and that pressure that so many people in our community were feeling, that the world's watching us to create this blueprint, right? And so that pressure is still there. And every time it seems like there's maybe a little bit of progress, I think that the folks who were advocating for vote yes, they felt like there was progress. They got 21,000 signatures to be able to get that question on the ballot, right? And so every time we see a little bit of progress, then it kind of feels like there's either resistance or there is criticism on whether or not that is the type of change that we need. But people are not giving up, Anthony. People are continuing to be innovative. We've seen a number of community leaders run for office and actually be elected into seat.
I was just saying, including the first Eritrean elected person in the country in the school board race for Holla Henderson in St. Paul. So I've definitely seen your point.
Yeah, and hoping to be able to utilize these positions and the power that comes along with them to bring forth change. I think what is crucial, what's critical, Anthony, is that regardless of what your ethnic or racial background is, when you're in these seats as a public servant, that you do the community outreach that's necessary. You connect with the community and you really find out what it is that they want. And I think that that was a huge misstep with this charter amendment proposal, is that there was this outreach done and we knew going into it that the community was divided on voting yes and voting no. And we also know that research has shown that initial campaign to defund the police was not necessarily based on community outreach, that that was something that a small handful of people decided was a good thing to do. And they moved forward with it. And now, you know, a lot of people have criticized that campaign to contributing to the increase in gun violence that we're seeing in North Minneapolis. And so, you know, our community is not a monolith. You know, there's a variety of lived experiences that our community has had. There's a variety of social and economic issues that we are navigating within our community. And so I think that it's important as we press forward in our pursuit for change, in our pursuit for justice and accountability, that we find a way to begin to unite on some of these solutions that we're seeking.
You know, it's not lost on me, and I know we have a powerful guest that I want to bring in shortly, you know, who can speak a lot to the things that we've brought up. You know, this all of this, our conversation is also happening in the backdrop of some major national events that are happening as well. The trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, who brought guns to protests in Kenosha and shot protesters. You know, many of us, if you were reading articles recently, would have seen that the judge was not going to allow, and I think still, and I think that stayed in place, is not going to allow prosecutors to refer. They were allowed to refer to them as rioters, as and all these other negative terms, setting the stage.
Yeah, I think the judge declined the request to refer to them as victims.
Right,
as victims. And so they can be referred to as protesters, and these are the protesters who were killed.
Right.
The prosecutors wanted to refer to them as victims, and the judge is not allowing that.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, created and supported by AMPERS, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org. I want to bring our guest in because I really want to get Sharon Smith Akinsanya's perspective on this, because I've been seeing your face as we've been talking. And so I really want to bring you in and to introduce yourself to the community, and also so that we can check in with you, who I consider, you know, you're one of my community teachers. I look up and see you speak and see you write, and you help me make sense of the world. And so I'm so glad to have you on. And so our guest today is Sharon Smith Akinsanya, and I would like her to introduce herself and tell you a little bit about how she comes to us and some of her work in community.
Thank you, Anthony. Yes, I'm Sharon Smith Akinsanya. I am the CEO of Ray McKenzie Group. We're an award-winning diversity, equity, and inclusion marketing firm, and I'm also the founder of a proprietary software that helps Black professionals and other professionals of color identify those employers who are serious about helping them land their dream careers, get them promoted, and advance throughout all levels of the corporation, called peopleofcolorcareers.com.
I want to say auntie, just because that's how I see you in community. So Auntie Sharon.
Yes.
As you've heard Georgia and I talk, what are some of the things that were coming up for you as you were hearing us kind of talk about some of the things that are front and center in Georgia's journalism this week?
Well, you know, we were divided, you know, as a community in Minneapolis on the ballot issue number two. But we're not that far apart. See, right now, it's time to do the work. You know, the yes side had some great ideas about what they wanted to get done. The no side had the same ideas about what they wanted to get done. The difference was, is how are we going to get there, right? You know, we all wanted safe communities. We all want the violence to stop in our neighborhoods. We all want the right size response to policing. So the only difference is what was going to be the plan? You know, how were we going to get there? And so now, you know, Minneapolis has spoken. They've said they want to keep the charter, you know, that allows for police. They want to keep the position of police chief because Rondo's very popular, more popular than the city council, more popular than the mayor.
For sure.
You know, and he wasn't even on the ballot, right? You know, on the ballot at all. So now is, you know, the work has to be done. I think one of the things that Georgia brought up was very important. You know, you have to go into community and ask the question, you know, what is it is going to help you make your community safe? What is it that you want? And I think that there were some mistakes made. I think that there were some, outside forces that didn't ask the question, you know, and didn't build the relationships necessary to really get their point across on the yes side. On the no side, you know, I think that they did a better job of asking the question, working with faith-based communities, you know, working with the police chief, all of the police chiefs. So I just think that they were just better manned as it pertains to relationships. And, you know, in the work that I do, it's all about building relationships and asking good questions. But, you know, but we're not that far apart still. It's time to unite. And we need to just figure it out and hold the mayor, who now has more power, help Rondo, hold the city council. Everybody needs to be held accountable because, see, the work begins now. Now is now what, right, is the thing. How do we get the reform? How do we get the accountability? How do we get the transformation that we all seek? And so we're going to have to come together and make sure that that happens, whether it's social workers, mental health support, which we already have in the plan. It's just that it needs to be formalized, right? And we need to be transparent. We need to make sure everything is out in front of the public. You know, everybody needs to know step by step what's happening. But we already have, you know, mental health workers. But we also know from research that they don't want to go into a call without a police officer, making sure that the situation is safe. So both things can be true.
Yeah.
We just have to figure out a way to make it happen.
Sharon, you're a Minneapolis resident as well as a Minneapolis business owner. And you talked a lot about how your elderly mother influenced your decision to vote no. Can you expound on that some and also share with us, how did you feel when you found out that the idea of having this public safety department had been rejected? Where were you at? What were you feeling at that time?
Well, you know, I was relieved because I couldn't imagine a city without police. You know, with I just was nervous that it would be the wild, wild west because there was no real plan of how we were going to do it. And I, in my experience being a Minneapolis resident, I had never seen the city council do anything in 30 days. So I was very concerned about the time frame, you know, that they had given themselves to enact this new Office of Public Safety. And so I've never seen anything happen that fast in the city. And I've lived here for many, many years. And so my mom, who is 81, was very concerned. She wants a safe downtown. She wants a safe city. She wants to feel like the way she puts it, you know, if I call 911, if I have to, God forbid, I want Rondo to be able to send me somebody. and so I was relieved. But at the same time, I was ready to get to work to hold the mayor and Rondo and the city council accountable. You know, we have to make change. We cannot have a corrupt police department. We have to give right-sized responses to traffic stops. You know, so we're all on the same side here. It's just how do we get there? You know, yes, maybe we do need a combination of peace officers and some police officers. And so we have to now get to work you know, and help the community, help Rondo and the mayor get this done. We can't sit on the sidelines. Now is not the time to do that. We need to stay. We need to keep the band together. Hmm. And make sure that we're holding, you know, our leaders who we elected accountable.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, with special guest Sharon Smith Akinsanya. Created and supported by AMPERS, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org. You know, I think it's fascinating to see, you know, what shook out on this on these elections, because I think a lot of folks realized that what they were looking at to get a pulse on community was just not an accurate representation. Right. You know, a lot of folks learned that social media is not a good way. If you were looking at social media and all these quote unquote aggregate responses, even some of the news articles that were coming out, you'd have thought there was a whole lot of contention in hand wringing in St. Paul, and Georgia and I were looking at the results when it came in. And at least in the mayor's side, there was no question. 61% of the vote for the St. Paul's mayor, and 5,000 more people voted for him than in his last election, which was actually contested with a candidate that folks thought, you know, would actually, you know, give some competition. And that mayor has been implementing a response around, you know, the sending non-police responders and things like that. And so maybe, you know, as you talk about, we're not that far apart.
No, we're not.
I think that's a really excellent point. And there does seem to be some space to be able to say, all right, that's done is done. I like what my grandma often says is when folks in the family fight and they get done having all the arguments and pissing everybody off, and we get past the main elephant that's been in the room and finally addressed, mm-hmm. she often will come in and say, all right, so now what we gonna do?
Right.
And so that's handled.
That's where we're at right now, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, it's been rough the past 18 months or so with the pandemic. And you know, now it's time to start to get to work. Mayor Carter has to continue.
No, this is Bearing Witness. He's Melvin here.
Okay. So Melvin's going to have to, you know, get to, you know, continue to work and build on, you know, his reform, working mm-hmm. with, you know, Chief Axtell and everybody over there. And Jacob, you know, who squeaked by, okay? let's just keep it real. Like, that could have been a bloodbath. But because of, you know, Q2 and Rondo, you know, it pulled him over the finish line, but that could have been bad. Mm-hmm. So now Jacob, he also won Q1, got mm-hmm. more power, you know, as the mayor of Minneapolis. City council, you know, his power is a bit diminished based on the fact that one passed. He's going to have to show us what he's got. No mm-hmm. longer he can hide behind, oh, the city council won't let me. Well, that's not going to work. So we're going to have to try to figure out, you know, how to get the work done. We're going to have to roll up his sleeves and get the work
done. That's right. And Sharon, speaking of getting work done, you get a lot of work done as the CEO of Ray McKenzie Group. If you guys are not familiar, it is a diversity, equity, and inclusion marketing firm. You work with corporations all across the state of Minnesota on meeting their DEI goals. And we saw a lot of promises and commitments come from these corporations after the murder of George Floyd. Many of these corporations announcing that they were going to commit millions of dollars to help with racial equity and economic justice. Have you followed up with any of these corporations on all these big promises? And how many of them have actually produced receipts for those promises? Right?
So listen, we had about over 2,000 or so corporations across this nation make those types of pledges. Some were for, you know, social justice. Some were to increase racial inclusivity at all levels of the corporate structure. Some was to do more investments into small business. You know, it was a lot of promises and pledges, and so many that it's really hard to keep up. Now, some of those corporations have made many millions of dollars worth of investments, right? And so it's going to take time to see those results. You know, U.S. Bank, for example, you know, committed, you know, millions of dollars to help small businesses, you know, actually micro businesses with loans by giving financing to CDFIs, and it's a program called Access Commitment. You know, so many corporations are doing a great job in making the investment. The challenge is making sure the information is readily available so that we understand how to access it. Okay, so there's no point in doing all of this if community doesn't quite know how to get it done. So that's the phase that we're working on now. Okay, you're making the commitments. Now, how do we know how to access the opportunities that you're talking about? But for the most part, here's the deal. Corporate America has been on a fast food diet for hundreds of years, okay? And there's a price to pay for systemic racism. There's a price to pay. And you can't just decide that, okay, I'm going to start eating salad now. Mm-hmm. You know, and you think you're still not going to have some consequences around that. You're still going to get heart disease. OK, we're not going to be able to just snap our fingers and just because you made that investment is going to make it OK. We can't do that. We're going to have to really come up with different ways to be more authentic and more transparent in letting the community know how you're making real change. There are 15 reporters, and I don't know if you guys read this article in the Business Insider, but there are 15 reporters that are doing nothing but following corporations to see how they're doing on their commitments. Now, the good news is that there are hundreds of corporations that have agreed to let us track them. Mm-hmm. So even though they're not doing great, they've agreed to the transparency to allow the reporters and the public to hold them accountable. So that is the problem that we have right now. How the transparency. So we've made the pledges, we've made the promises. How do we look up under the hood and know exactly what you're doing? So that's the work that we're trying to get accomplished now.
You know, in that arena, one of the things that that we have seen in Georgia has brought to the table over and over again is the creativity of this moment. The amount of people who have been able to create new businesses, new ventures, new ideas, new nonprofits have also grown in this area. And they don't get the attention that they deserve in many cases. I have several friends who have taken this moment, and part of it's been because of the pandemic. We can't forget that we're still in this other pandemic as well. But I've seen so many folks be able to say, you know what, I'm not going to settle. One of the places of hope that I have seen out of this is if this is the society, if these are the outcomes that we see, and as tragic as they are, and we're having to see that anyway, then I might as well do the things that are going to fulfill me. I might as well take this opportunity to launch out and do some of those things. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and for letting us check in with you, and for having some exchange. You put some fat on our heads, to borrow from our Auntie Lissa Jones. And so I want to thank you for being able to join us. We always end with our healing quote. So I'm going to kick it over to you to take us out.
In the words of Dr. Joy Lewis, may the revolution be healing.
This is Bearing Witness.
Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia is a production of Racial Reckoning, The Arc of Justice, a journalism project created and supported by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, in partnership with KMLJ Radio, the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.